WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel and Kayla Molzan in for Dave Malarkey on today's edition of It's Your Turn. Dave will be back on Wednesday, so we're holding down the fort for two more days. We've got another jam-packed show for you today, and that includes bringing in Vicki Hinterberger and Megan Wills, and they are folks with us right here at the Butler Radio Network, and we'll bring them in to talk about the big Spirit of Christmas parade coming up in just a few more days. And also, we've got Patty Everly on. Actually, Ryan Saylor will sit down and chat with her. She's the curator of historic events at the Carnegie Science Center. Mini Railroad and Village is the up and new at the Carnegie Science Center. So he'll have a chance to talk with her. He'll also chat with Chad Hunter. He's the manager of the Rangos Giant Cinema at the Carnegie Science Center. So we're going to get an idea of what's going on at the Carnegie Science Center. Good time for winter activities. Yep. Always can be done at the Carnegie Science Center.
It's Thanksgiving week already, Tyler. It's hard to believe.
It's amazing. It's just right here. It's going on right now. It snuck up on me. It always does.
I know. I'm excited to talk with Vicki. She's our boss here, general manager at the Butler Radio Network. Just to talk about the Christmas parade, it's been a tradition, I think it's the 53rd year, if I have that right, of the Christmas parade in Butler. So it's a huge tradition. I like that we wait until Thanksgiving is over to do it in our town. I know that in Pittsburgh they had Light Up Night this past weekend, which is great, and I know it was a great turnout. And I saw a lot of people just on social media putting up their trees over the over the weekend for the holidays. I just want to pump the brakes a little bit. I like to do Thanksgiving, celebrate Thanksgiving, and then move on to Christmas. I do know a lot of people kind of lump the two together.
And that, I think that's happened more.
And I get it. But it seemed more so this year than in past years.
Well, there's always the commercialization aspect of Christmas that really starts to happen in early November. And so I think it's just natural for us to lump them together. But I'm with you. I'm a big Thanksgiving person. Love the food. I've always said it's the perfect meal. It just seems like everything matches everything. And I think we, in a time where we move so fast, you know, everything's going on, where we just tend to lump things together when it's all right to take it, you know, piece by piece and celebrate. You know, I don't really even, for the most part, celebrate the whole idea of the pilgrims coming over and breaking bread with the Native Americans. Sure, that's a major aspect of Thanksgiving, but I really think most people now don't look at it from a historical aspect, but rather just a time where you can really pull a weekday off, gather around, talk with families, friends, and just have a good time. And I really think, you know, sure, it was great that the pilgrims and the Native Americans had, you know, dinner and broke bread and everything, but I really think, you know, in today's day and age, the more important thing is just getting together, slowing down for one day, and having a drink and food with family.
Yeah. Maybe we should think back to the pilgrims.
Maybe we should.
to have a feeling of togetherness and oneness. I mean, we definitely need that. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't like the idea, personally, of sitting down to Thanksgiving dinner and having my Christmas tree in the background. I just don't like it, which a lot of people do, but I want to, you know, I still want the corner. My aunt used to make, and we don't go to this aunt's house anymore, but she used to make a cornucopia out of fresh bread.
Really?
And at the after dinner, we would all, like, get into it and rip it apart and eat it. But it was so beautiful. Like, that's kind of the decorations I want, like, on my tablescape.
You want the fall.
I don't want Christmas yet. But then on Friday, okay.
You're ready to go full on Christmas mode.
Right. I don't know. That's just me, though.
No, I don't disagree with that. I'm all right with that.
I heard, I was not out at the grocery store yesterday, but I heard it was just...
I heard the same
thing. Which I think, obviously, it's Thanksgiving week, people getting right, but also the fact that we didn't have a Steelers game.
Boom. Yep. I think you had it right on the button.
The combination of the two, I heard it was like nuts. You might as well just walk from home.
And I'm not going to fake it and act like I actually go grocery shopping at any point. Like, I fully admit I never go to the grocery store except when I have to get a few things for myself. So I heard it from, again, secondhand sources that it was just a madhouse going on. And I've even heard some other people just talking about it down in, like, the Pittsburgh market, just because they know when the Steelers will play. I do find it amazing when the Steelers play, and if I'm on the road by chance listening to the game, of course, right here on WISR, I am amazed at how little people are out on the roads. I mean, they're not there at all. They're completely empty. So yesterday, I think full on force. It wasn't great weather, but it was good enough for people to go out and about. Today, completely different.
I think that is true, especially, I mean,
yesterday,
in a small town like Butler, you can't, if they're playing, you could go out at 1:30 and you feel like it's 1:30 in the morning, besides the fact that it's light out. I mean, there's no one. It's a ghost town.
Yeah, there's absolutely no one out when the Steelers play, contrary to yesterday when they were out in full force. So Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. Like I said, we've got the Thanksgiving parade coming up this Saturday, and how about the weather? Looks like we're going to have leading up through Thanksgiving. Do you think that will increase the travel rate? Or do you think people are going no matter what
to the parade?
No. I'm sorry, Thanksgiving Day. I should have should have said that earlier. Do you think Thanksgiving Day travel increases if weather is bad or not? Or do you think people are going no matter what?
I mean, I think if we had a full on snowstorm, you know, then that would leave people to stay home or change their plans, you know, go earlier or later. But, you know, rain.
People are going dreary, no matter what.
Yeah, they're going. And a lot of people are going. We're going to talk about that just in the news the next couple mornings. You really got to plan ahead. And PennDOT makes it super easy. I mean, they have a couple apps. They even told me, I was talking to our spokesman for District 10, which Butler County falls into, Waze. That's that popular app. I don't have it, but PennDOT actually has, they collaborated with Waze, which is really cool. It's a user-driven app. So, like, you're driving down 79 or the Turnpike, and there's an accident. A user would have to say there was an accident at this location. If you pass it, you can say, yes, the accident's still happening. There's restrictions still happening. And then when another user comes and doesn't see it anymore, they'll say, okay, it's gone. So it's all driven by other drivers, which is kind of cool. And they partnered with them. So they just really want you to plan ahead. Remember a couple years ago when there was that big snowstorm in late January, early February, when the Turnpike shut down for 36 hours? They don't want that to happen anymore. So they're saying, please look at these apps, you know what you're coming up against before you leave. Or if you're driving, know a couple exits ahead that something happens, you can get off and not, you know, get stuck.
And I have found that on any type of traveling occasion where I will be going out and there will be like three or four cars that take a certain exit because it changes your route because of an accident. You can just follow those cars and they are going the exact same route you are. It's amazing. Almost scary at times at how good technology has gotten in terms of tracking about where you are, what is going on in front of you, and what is going on behind you, and what is the best alternative to get to where you need to go. I mean, it's a very cool thing to have when you're traveling, but when you really stop and think about it, I mean, they know where you are. And I'm not like one of those conspiracy theorists, but I mean, they know exactly where you are and what's going to go. If you don't think automated cars are coming, I would say in the next 10 years, I think you're crazy, because if they're able to get it down to that close of a science, how would they not be able to drive your car?
Yeah, definitely.
Are you okay with that? I know this is not where we were planning on going, but I do have a question. I mean, do you like the idea of automated car, or do you like the idea of you being in control of it?
I would say a mix of both to start. I know it'll get full on, but I think a lot of accidents are caused by user error. To put it simply, I mean, I think it's other drivers doing stupid stuff, you know, whether it's they're too tired, they're too much in a rush, they're distracted.
Drinking and driving.
I mean, that's all caused by human error. So if we could eliminate that, that would be great. But I think there's still what if there's a mix? You know what I mean? There's still people that are driving their own cars and then there's some machines that are driving your car. I don't understand how that will go.
No, that's the one hiccup that I think is with it. I think if everybody was on the automated system, there would be less wrecks. I mean, that's my I firmly believe that, just because if you say every almost 90% of every accident, if not 100%, are user, you know, controlled. Tiredness, drunk driving, even loss of control, speeding, different things like that. If that was all controlled by you know, an automated system,
mm-hmm.
I think we would all be better. So I'm not one that's opposed to this automated driving, but I'm with you if everybody else is on that system, because that automated driver would probably be counting on the calculation of somebody coming through.
Right, and of the computer calculation.
Exactly.
You can't ever program for all the
someone
human,
speeding coming
right.
the other way before you have to make a left-hand
right.
turn. And
right.
I never even thought about the left-hand and right-hand turn stuff. All right, maybe I've really underthought this. On paper, for the first sentence, it looked good. I do think there will be more and more automated cars coming out. Actually, I think there was just a Cadillac commercial that was on TV the other day that showed a driver stepping away from the wheel and letting the car go.
Mm-hmm.
I think this could be something you see on highways and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much back roads, but
yeah,
at least on
sure.
the highway.
And then the car could just take you around any accident. Back to those apps and stuff. To me, it seems like there's so much information at our fingertips, like you say. They know where
mm-hmm.
you are. But it's the time that when you need it the most is when you don't have it. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't download the apps and you're not tuned in, then you come across an accident. You're like, oh, I wish I would have known.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why they want you to prepare beforehand. Something happened on the way, too. I had one of my sisters was going to Light Up Night in Pittsburgh on mm-hmm. Saturday, driving from Butler County. Apparently, there was a car fire between the Cranberry and Wexford exits. It took an hour and 15 minutes to get from the Cranberry exit on 79 to the Wexford exit. She had to turn around, missed all of Light Up Night. I don't know if anybody
wow.
else had been stuck in that. I mean, it honestly was 75 minutes from the two exits, which I don't know. I mean, that's not very many miles between the two. I don't have an exact calculation, but it's just one of those things. If you would have known as you were pulling on, you would have got off at Cranberry instead of...
You could have gone 19 down.
Exactly.
You could have gone Route A, whatever it may have been.
Yeah.
No, when we did our long weekend trip this past weekend, we were driving through the back roads of West Virginia, and I thought to myself, and we started, this was the annual college football trip I was talking about on Coffee with Kate. So this would have happened in, I would say, when I was in the fourth grade, when MapQuest may be an early thing. But
you were still printing them out?
And we were still printing
yep.
them out time by time. But after that, we have moved to the GPS, automating everything,
mm-hmm.
and it's just become such a convenience that I forget how we would do it.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the open talk program, a portion of our program right now. We do have a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to thank Kayla for talking about Waze last week, because I was going down to Light Up Night Friday, and we used Waze, and we bypassed that whole mess.
Did you really?
It took us on some... Yes, we did. They took us through a couple of side roads in Wexford, and then we picked up the 79 in Wexford and bypassed
mm-hmm.
the whole thing.
That's so neat that PennDOT has teamed up with them, because I know Waze is so popular.
Uh-huh. My husband knew about it, but I said, I think there's some kind of app I heard about today, and he said, Waze, and we made it. So
well, I'm glad you made it.
Not get caught up.
I have
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I was telling you my sister didn't even make it. So there you go. Case in point.
Download
Waze.
Yeah, we've got an unpaid spokesperson advocating on behalf of the Waze app. No, I've heard about it. And I've got a Google app that does kind of the same thing. But Waze is like user interacted, so
yes.
other people can hop in
mm-hmm.
and give information.
Mm-hmm.
When the Google map is just kind of going off of
mm-hmm.
what the traffic reports are saying. And so it kind of guesses that there's an accident
right.
in a certain location.
Well, what's Google Map like? Because I know Waze will talk to you as
well.
Oh,
my Google Map will talk
okay.
to me, yeah.
So that's nice, too. If you are in the car by yourself, you know.
Yeah, and these cars now have, which is amazing, my car does not, but a lot of them have Bluetooth or maybe even an auxiliary cord where you can plug it in.
Goes
and
through
that
the speakers.
Way, yeah, and that way you don't have to put your hands on the phone. That's the only thing that I don't like about the GPS is I'll have to blast the volume. That way, I know, because I don't have one of those fancy screens on my dashboard or anything like that. You know, I'm still going off of what the volume of the phone is telling
right.
me. You know, most of the time I know where I'm going. You know, I'm not traveling too far into intricate areas. But when you're doing these long-distance road trips or even something is going down to Pittsburgh, because you don't know
right.
that there's an accident in front of you. So
right.
you know, you may know the way, but you may want to, you know, have
exactly.
ways as just a little buddy to say, hey, look, there's an accident up there. You may want to take care
I'm
of
glad
it.
Glad that lady made it.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
There we go. It's going to be busy. I mean, from now, I think really from now through New Year's, the roads
yeah,
are going to be busy out there.
I know. It's going to be packed.
Say that every day.
Exactly. Well, tell you what. Let's take a break. We'll bring in Vicki Hinneberger, okay. Megan Wilson, and we'll talk about the Christmas parade that's coming up this Saturday. It's hard to believe that it is that close. So we'll tell you what's going on with the Christmas parade. That's all coming up next right here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Hey, folks, have you heard about Golan Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Golan Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Golan Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Golan Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Golan Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Welcome back to the program. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Malarkey on this Monday, November 20th. Beautiful day outside. We're expected to get to a high of 41 degrees today. Mm-hmm. Sunny skies tomorrow even looks better. We're supposed to get up to a high of 51. Yeah. So we're off to a good start to Thanksgiving week. And I know some members around the office here have their fingers crossed for this Saturday that we're going to have some good weather as well. It's the Spirit of Christmas Parade. Let's go to Vicki. I'm going to ask you the first question. This is Vicki Hinneberger, by the way. She's the general manager of the Butler Radio Network. We're also here with Megan Wilson. She's our event coordinator. How many annual years has this parade been going on?
It's been going on for 53 years. And sometimes it feels like we've been a part of all of them, but we've only been in charge about the last 5 years, I believe. Is it six? Five, six. She's our counting. Six. It is our sixth this year. And it's a joy to do, and a lot of people are real glad when it's over. We're all excited when it first starts. And then by the time it hits, kind of like a lot of things around here and at home, you're excited, and then all of a sudden, oh, my God, it's coming. And so it's a lot of work. And our staff is not a real large staff, and it takes a lot of time, not only from our staff but our parade committee. So we're very excited about it. It's the 53rd annual Spirit of Christmas Parade, presented by the Butler Radio Network, which consists of not only the three radio stations, WISR, WBUT, the Rock Station 97.7, and Butler Radio, our web website component. So we have a lot of things going on, and our major sponsor this year is XTO, and they are a consummate sponsor. They help us in many ways, and they even help carry their banner on Main Street the night of the parade. So we have that confirmed this year as well. Correct, Meg?
Yes, that's right. So. I think it's so funny because people think that the parade just happens, that you just go out and it just happens, that we aren't, you know, they don't know who's behind it. That's why we wanted to bring you two in. A lot of work goes into it, like you said.
It truly does. And we do have a parade committee of community, not only business people, but some citizens that just want to be a part and help make a difference. I want to give them some credit, too, today. One of the business people is Jimmy Ciprian from Miller's mm-hmm. Shoes, and his family has been involved probably all 53 years. Mm-hmm. I do need to give them credit for that.
Was it 53 consecutive years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is a tradition. I mean, it truly is a tradition in this community.
Right. And then we have Jim Thompson, who is not only representing his company, Hardinger, but also the Butler Rotary. the Butler AM Rotary. Okay. Then we have Sharon Schneider, who is a part of the Schneider 1 Hour Heating, and we have Matt Lutz from the Armstrong Group. And he is vital because he helps to record the program and then show it to lots of people that can't actually make it out that night. So
before we get to all the activities, I know you do way more than just a parade. You started a whole day-long activity list. But how do you come across the – or how do you pick the theme? How do you have different themes that you're – what is the theme, Megan, and how do you pick it?
This year's theme is a cartoon Christmas. Picking the theme is just a brainstorming session of – our committee. We go back and forth. Sometimes it's tough coming up with a theme. Tossing things around, ones that have kind of been reused, and we try to not do that too often. So this year we just did the cartoon Christmas, thinking that we wanted to see not only just holiday cartoons, but anything from classic to current, from Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck to the Paw Patrol and Peppa Pig and all those current ones that are out there now. So we thought it would be a fun way of just changing it up a little bit.
Kids will love that this year.
Oh, yeah, I'm very excited. I hear maybe a costume is on my way. So,
oh, definitely, boy, buddy.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
The excitement is only just increasing as each day goes by.
Meg, give an example. Tease some of them that we have coming. Some unusual.
Some of the cartoons. We do have some Mickey Mouse. Mm-hmm. We have some, let me see, there is a Paw Patrol float. Trying to think off the top of my head. I don't have that paper with me.
Paw Patrol is popular.
It is. It's a big one this year.
Mm-hmm. The Grinch?
Yeah, we still do have some people doing the holiday ones, the Grinch. Mm-hmm. There is a Snoopy one, I believe, a Charlie Brown theme. Toy Story. I think I have two Toy Stories in there this year, which is nice. It's not Christmas, but it's, you know, I think they're putting a Christmas spin on the Toy Story theme. We have a Yogi Bear. That's from the actual campground up north. So they're
that's a nice time.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. So that should be fun.
And most of the floats do have lights on them because it is a nighttime parade. It's the only nighttime parade we do.
And we do
county.
Require that. That's one of the components they're judged on as well, is their lighting and their use of lights.
Mm-hmm. So nighttime parade, but there are a lot of things going on during the day. Of course, it's Small Business Saturday. So you've got downtown Main Street. A lot of businesses will be open. What other activities could people do if they are coming down to downtown Butler, maybe to do a little bit of shopping? Are there any other activities going on that day?
We have quite a bit, and the reason we did move it to Saturday from the previous time when it was on Friday, when it was a lot of people out shopping and their families didn't get to come see it, we moved to Saturday because of the Small Business Saturday emphasis. The activities are all over town. In addition to the Newcastle Street Plaza area, we have many different activities in different buildings and on Main Street. The Newcastle Street Plaza will include some mascots. We have everybody from Babe the Blue Sox Ox. We have the Steelers Steely McBeam. We have Rocky from Slippery Rock University. And then we have a Minion.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. That could be somebody we all know.
And probably then, Pat Parker.
And then we have Olaf, Elsa, and Anna from Frozen. Mm. So we have a lot of characters, and you can get your picture taken with all them. In addition, we will have some light-up toys for sale in that vicinity, and we have an 8-foot stocking they're going to be selling chances to for the benefit of Caring Angels.
So you say 8-foot stocking, is this
stuffed
going to be
Christmas,
filled?
Oh, okay. Christmas toys, all kinds of toys for different ages. So it'll be something that's in that vicinity so people can participate in that as well. Anything else in the Newcastle Street Plaza area?
Yes, we also have the Turkey Hill ice cream. They have this giant, giant cow. I think it's like
it's big.
2 tons, 13 feet long, I believe. but they'll be there, and they'll be handing out free ice cream samples as well.
Oh, free ice cream samples.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's supposed to be like 50 degrees. At
Let's
least
hope.
That's what I was reading.
I
so maybe it is. Maybe it will be perfect for ice cream. Spirit of Christmas Parade at night. What time, Megan, does it start?
The parade starts at 5:30.
Okay, so 5:30 start time. People can just line up Main Street like any other parade.
That's right.
But we also have lots more activities before then. We also have a synthetic ice surface, and we have a synthetic ice rink. So children, adults, anyone can go skate, and that's in the People's Gas lot, adjacent to the People's Gas building on Main Street. And adjacent to that is something brand new. Can I have a drum roll?
No.
Okay. No. What I would like
There's
to
a lot of reverberation in here.
What I'd like to announce is for the first time we have a life-size snow globe.
Oh, okay.
And then you can have your picture taken inside the snow globe. And there'll be music playing. It's going to be very festive in that mm-hmm. area.
And that's right by the skating rink.
Yes. Okay. And plus, we also have another, drum roll, please. Okay, we have a hockey shootout area. And kids can have some fun pretending to score big in the hockey arena.
So there's a lot for anybody to do when they come downtown.
Right.
When do those activities start? Is that early in the morning?
Those ones start at noon, and they start, at noon, from noon to 4:30, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. So you can make a whole day out of this.
Mm. Right. Plus, we're not even touched Candyland yet.
Let's go to Candyland.
Let's get to it. Let's get to it.
Would you like me to ask a question about
sure,
this?
Sure. Why don't you?
So what exactly is Candyland, and where is that located?
Candyland is located in the second floor area of the Butler YMCA. It's in the gym, and half of it, of the gym, is done in a life-size version of Candyland, and children are the pieces. They're the ones that go from square to square as the pieces in the game. And then they exit there, and they go into the other half of the gym, and there's all different kinds of games, crafts, and activities, face painting, that type of thing, and it's all free. Everything we have talked about today is free. Other than the light-up toys that they could purchase.
Wow, so even ice, even the ice skating. Wow, I was going to say, I know in the past, it was really small. It was like a dollar or two, but I love how everything is so affordable because a lot of people can't get out of Butler, but they still want to take their kids, they have several kids. It can really add up. So it's a great activities for the families.
Also a good chance to check out the YMCA. They have gone, I was just in there about a week or two ago. They have redone a lot of the inside, and it is very nice. So if you haven't had a chance to go down, maybe Saturday would be a good day to take the kids, go down, just kind of see what amenities they have going on, and also go out and check Candyland. By the way, we are here with Vicki Henneberger and Megan Willison. We are talking about the Spirit of Christmas Parade that is coming up this Saturday in downtown Butler. And this is going to, Kayla, you are on the broadcast for this, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to be on Armstrong in case people can't make it down. How many years have we been doing that? Has it been on Armstrong a long time?
Oh, yeah. It's been on for a very long time. Yes. I don't know that exact year because it's been Armstrong's project, but as long as we've been involved, they've been on. And both Bob Cupp and Kayla do the announcing of the parade, and they do an awesome job. They represent us very well, and it's been a lot of fun in this process. But we do have a lot of sponsors to thank because this all, even though we provide it for free, is not free. So Megan has a list of the sponsors we'd like to thank.
Well, as Vicki said, our main sponsor is XTO Energy, and without them, we wouldn't be doing any of this. People's Gas is another big one. They sponsored the skating rink and that giant snow globe this year. They have taken on that sponsorship as well. Then we have some others, McDonald's Restaurants, Applewood Chiropractic, Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. That's a tough one. Thought I'd get it. IDL Worldwide, Shaner Automotive, and Slippery Rock True Value. And then we have some of our downtown businesses that are supporting us as well. Thompson Miller Funeral Home, Working Man Store, Fisher's Towing Service, Morgan Management Company, Downtown Sounds, Benko Orthodontics, American Legion Post 117.
Oh, the dreaded Vicki handwriting. Go ahead.
Slip me a note.
Sound off.
No, that's good. And those are our sponsors for this year.
Our boss, Vicki Henneberger, has fantastic handwriting.
Yes. I did get the Peterson certificate for handwriting.
Did you?
Yes. Apparently I misplaced it.
Yeah, I don't know where it's at now. So, Megan, we talked a little bit about the planning for this parade, and Kayla had mentioned just how much work actually goes into this. When do you start the planning for this?
We usually have our first committee meeting springtime, maybe April.
Really?
Just to kind of get together and meet and kind of get back into the swing of things and start thinking about a theme. Early in the year.
And people start planning their floats, too, early. And they start setting up their floats early.
We start getting phone calls early summer saying, hey, do you know what the theme is yet? Because they want to start planning and,
getting ready. That morning, too, it's about noon. And I'm always walking up and down Main Street looking at everything. People are there. They're starting their floats. Mm-hmm. They're stringing lights. It's really, really festive. And they do that in several areas. But one in the parking lot of that church right on Main Street.
Right. Westminster Church on Main Street, they are invaluable partners with us. They help us get all those floats organized and just helping the staging of that and getting them set up and in locations that's going to be easy to get them out into the parade route, and the judges help them get the judging system going through there. Yeah, Westminster Church, that's where the float's set up.
I did want to talk about judging, too, because there are some prizes up for grabs. There's two different – Vicki can talk about this. There's two different
categories,
nonprofits and for-profits. How many prizes are you given?
We give a lot of different prizes. The categories are commercial and not nonprofit, and we give one best overall, most original, and best use of lights. And the judges we have a lot of pressure on them because there are a lot of them that are excellent. And it's a very difficult – I would not want to be one of the judges. It's tough. It's a tough assignment. And then we have an open category, too, for kind of like the Chevy Chase Christmas type, anything goes competition. And we have people that enter in that as well. But the judges start judging at around 3 in the afternoon. That's how long it takes, guys. And then they actually judge during the parade as well, and they're located on a flatbed in the front of Fisher's Sunoco, or Fisher's service station. And what they do there is they are then judged on the lights. They judge because you can't judge in the middle of the day, and it's not fair,
right?
Because some of them just do such a beautiful job with their lights. So we wait till that point in time, and then they judge their lights. So it's a lot of coordination, and these people take it very seriously. As far as judging, because it is a responsibility, because so many people put so much work, love, and care into these floats. So it takes a lot, and it is a lot of fun, but it is kind of a serious assignment as well.
Well, one of the judges, I believe, is our own Dave Mullarkey.
Yes, so he probably, and he's very artistic, so he would be very critical as far as in his judgment.
So just know, if you're putting a parade or a float into the parade this year, it will be judged by the critical eye of Dave and a few others. So make sure you spend your time. And speaking of other floats, I mean, I was down there last year, and really for the first time got to see a lot of the different floats. Are there any that stand out to you, maybe Vicki, Megan, both of you, in the time that you have done this, ones that are really just blows you away?
As I think about it, I think People's Gas always takes exceptional care. Their staff is very, very focused and wants to have a good impression in our market, and I think they take the time to really prepare a professional looking float.
And they're one of the ones that contact me in June or July asking me what the theme is so that they can start thinking about how they're going to design it.
And then a couple years ago, there was one by AK Steel. Do you remember?
I remember that. That's what I was going to say. It was like a
flame?
A flame. Yeah, it was kind of like a flame. But I mean, it, like she said, it looked professional. I mean, it's something that could be, I mean, people laugh. Like, it could be in a Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. There's like so much detail to it.
And then the other one was the Votex School.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes. Big cup of cocoa with steam coming out.
Yes. It was like scented steam.
It was unbelievable.
It was a scented steam.
Yeah, it smelled like chocolate.
Yeah.
So.
You see how excited we're getting?
I can tell.
Get your jingle on. Get your jingle on.
The energy is just alive here inside the Next Tier Bank Studios. So when people are, and from what I remember, there are chairs out in Main Street that start early. So if you do want to go see get a seat for this, there are competitive seats that are out there. Because the numbers, I mean, do we actually have an estimate on how many people show up to this? Because it seems like there's a ton.
I was going to say, you have to, after doing all this work, it has to make you feel good, though, because sometimes it's 5, 6, 7 people deep for blocks. Right. I mean, that's a huge event.
Right. It really is. And when you see the looks on the kids' faces, it's so much fun to see that, oh, you hit a home run. Or when a float goes by and they're laughing and, oh, they're giggling, that type of thing. The other thing I just want to stress is if you do have young children, people are to hand the candy out, not throw it, because I don't want anyone injured. With everything going on in today's world, we don't want to have anything happen to the youngsters as they're getting excited because they're giving them candy. So if you do have a youngster, please keep them back so that nothing happens.
Especially because it is dark.
Yes, it's a nighttime parade.
Exactly. Yeah. So
there is one other thing we haven't touched on yet is down at the Butler City Fire Station, we have a warming station. So the firefighters help us serve hot cocoa to anybody that wants to come through and warm up. Hopefully they're going just to visit, not to warm up. We're hoping for a nice weather this weekend. But there is hot cocoa, and the firefighters love having people come through. They like to show off their engines and stuff.
It's a good community effort.
It really is.
They love to talk to the firemen. You know, they get so excited. And we didn't talk about Santa.
That's right.
Santa.
It's that time
of year.
Big guy
at the end of the parade.
Exactly. And we're pleased to say that Shaner Automotive has graciously agreed again to be a part of the process. And they will be the ones that Mr. and Mrs. Claus will be on as they make their entrance into the city of Butler.
Tyler and I were saying we appreciate that you wait until after Thanksgiving to do this. Because a lot of communities did do it this past weekend.
Even sooner.
I like to do Thanksgiving, finish your turkey, you know, digest, and then we'll do... I am really adamant about this.
I'm with you.
Bob and I were talking about it this morning. But I do appreciate that, so thank you.
Any other final words you would like to give to the listeners? Maybe a recap of exactly what is going on, because you've got the Spirit of Christmas Parade coming up this Saturday. Festivities begin when?
At noon. And Megan can echo whatever I forget. The festivities begin at noon. Everything in the Newcastle Street Plaza area, in the People's Gas parking lot, and in the YMCA. Those all begin at noon, and they go till 4:30. The rink may stay open till 5 based on how long the line is, that type of thing. Then the parade begins at 5:30. We would encourage people. It is time to shop local, think local, enjoy local, eat local. Do what you can to make Butler and Butler County a strong enterprise for our area. It's a lot of fun what we do, and we do it to give back, to thank everyone for supporting the local radio stations. Anything I forgot, Meg?
I think you hit it all.
It's a good day to, you know, go to these activities, see the parade, go get a coffee at Cummings, go get a beer at Butler Brew Works. Recommend. I mean, there's so many. Go get a pizza at Natilli's. It's a good day to spend your money downtown because, as you both know, a dollar local goes way more than a dollar elsewhere.
Yes. Thank you.
So we'll leave it there. Spirit of Christmas Parade coming up this Saturday. Festivities begin at noon. Parade officially kicks off at 5 o'clock. 5:30. Well, get there at 5 anyways. Be there early. We'll come back. We're going to turn the keys over to It's Your Turn to Ryan Saylor as we talk about a little Carnegie Science Center. Next up will be Patty Everly. She's the curator of historic exhibits. It's the big mini railroad and village going on at the Carnegie Science Center. And then we'll also talk with Chad Hunter. He's the manager of the brand new Rangos Giant Cinema. They've made some updates to the IMAX, so stay tuned. Find out what that's all about. That's all coming your way next on It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM.
For so many of us, a loving pet is... well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 south and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about prearrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Ugh. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in 3 locations.
At Butler Health System, there's more to medicine than the most advanced tools and techniques. There's the dedication to providing the most personal care, one that's shared by every member of our team. like renowned neurosurgeon Dr. Michael Horowitz.
I came to Butler because I wanted to practice medicine the way it's supposed to be done. It's truly about the patient. We get to know the people and what's important to them.
That dedication is why Butler Health System is trusted by our neighbors across the region and chosen by exceptional doctors who share our philosophy that the patient comes first, like orthopedic surgeon Charles Spingola.
I knew I'd have the tools and technology, but I also knew that there was a real commitment to genuine care. We don't treat medicine like an assembly line.
At Butler, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Hello and welcome to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor in for Dave Malarkey, and today we're joined by Chad Hunter, manager of the Rangos Giant Cinema at the Carnegie Science Center. He's here to talk about the big changes made to a very big screen. Hello, Chad. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you.
Let's begin with some of the history of this particular theater. When was it built, and wasn't it known as the Rangos Omnimax Theater? Talk a little bit about that setup and the capabilities of that system.
Sure. Well, the Omnimax, Rangos Omnimax Theater opened in 1991 when the Carnegie Science Center first opened. It was an Omnimax dome, which I'm sure quite a few of your listeners actually had a chance to come through and see a film at the dome at some point. But it was at the time it was a state-of-the-art, projection system and meant to be entirely immersive. With that dome technology, you felt like you were really in the movie, in the action. And it utilized 70 millimeter projection system, really quite intense system. And when you would enter in to the main theater lobby, we had the projection booth actually behind the glass, so you could walk in and see the projectionist threading up the 70 millimeter projector. And then the projection system would actually, the film itself would actually go up into the theater. It would rise up on this, it's called the doghouse, up into the theater and would project in there. I think we had a lot of people that loved the dome. I think, over the course of however many years, 2.5 decades, the technology definitely shifted, and the conversion from film to digital, is definitely, well, in mainstream theaters has already taken place. Mm-hmm. So celluloid film, the majority of theaters have already made that transition. They had to, because films were, the vast majority of films, say 98% of films, are just not available on celluloid film anymore. Mm-hmm. And so most commercial theaters have made that transition. When it comes to domes, that's currently still taking place. So maybe half or so of dome theaters are making that transition right now. And so the reason we're making that transition now, a few different reasons. One has to do with our aging projection system. After 25 plus years, it was showing its age. It needed a lot of maintenance, and it was time to make a change. In addition, we just, discussed that we love projecting film. We love celluloid film, but there just were no longer good prints available. The prints that were around were extremely costly, and often if they were used prints, they would be scratched or beaten up. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the last reason is just the technology shift. So the new format, instead of 70 millimeter, is called DCP. That stands for Digital Cinema Package. And that's what, instead of getting large film reels of 70 millimeter, in some cases hundreds of pounds worth, and you might have, several reels that have to be shipped. It can cost a couple thousand dollars to ship those. Now you end up with just a very small hard drive, size of, just something you can, very small, you can hold in your hand.
Right.
So the shipping costs are a lot less, and the optical quality in most instances is truly, truly great. It just looks spectacular. Our system in particular is a 4K system, so that has to do with the resolution. And so a lot of, I would say the majority of theaters around the U.S. still are projecting in 2K, which is a smaller resolution. We're stepping up to 4K, which is really what you need for a giant screen like ours. And so that resolution coupled with, you know, our giant screen, we're a certified giant screen that is certified by the Giant Screen Cinema Association in the U.S. It's 70 feet wide by nearly 40 feet tall, and it really requires that great 4K quality image that we're able to project.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about the special send-off that the old Omnimax Theater was given over the summer. I know you guys had an event down there.
We did. We had I think it was a 36-hour Omnimax movie marathon in which we invited the public to come in and say goodbye to the theater. I think, you know, as I mentioned, millions of people have come through and seen films when they were kids, through their class trips, and also, you know, we've had adults come and get engaged in the theater. It's just been used by, you know, an entire community over the course of 25 years. And so a lot of people felt nostalgic about it. They wanted to be able to say goodbye. They wanted to see some of their favorite films that they had seen here. So we showed, I think it was over 20 of our classic Omnimax titles, you know, ranging from Humpback Whales to National Parks Adventure. There was a number of films that we showed. And we had an overwhelming response. We had more desire for the films than we could accommodate. And so we sold out nearly all of our shows. I think the exception were a couple shows maybe in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So our staff worked overnight the entire time. And there were actually a handful of patrons who came and saw every single show as well. And so, you know, I think people were really happy to have that opportunity to say goodbye to some of these films and to the theater, the Dome itself. You know, and that said, we were trying to, you know, talk about the reasons for the change, and you know, we're really excited about the new theater and the capabilities that it brings. And so, yeah, I think one thing that we're going to do, because, you know, people, not everyone was able to see their favorite films, mm-hmm. During the marathon, we can actually obtain some of these titles. We can get on the new digital format. Not all of them have been transferred yet. But those that are available, we're talking about doing a mini marathon of those films maybe sometime this spring.
Excellent. When did you come on board as manager, Chad, and what does your job entail down there?
Yep, I came on as senior director in, I think it was April or May. And, you know, I had formally worked with a theater to take, it was a local art house, through the film-to-digital conversion process. So that was a this opportunity opened. It was a perfect match for my skill set and my interests. So I came on and was able to be here during that whole, well, during the marathon, to say goodbye to the Dome, through the construction work, the demolition and construction work started the very next day after the marathon in July. And so that takes us up to today. I've been kind of working closely with our architects and construction team during the construction of the new Rangos Giant Cinema, and then we open just a week, November 17th, we open up. So we've got a lot of details to cover, but we've had a chance to watch some tests up on the screen, and I have to say we're really excited to share this with everyone. The 3D technology is really remarkable. It's not your old 3D by any means, and part of that is we have a new part of our new projection system is it's a dual 4K laser projection system by Christie. So there are two projectors that combine together, create a really remarkable 3D experience that we weren't able to. Most people haven't seen it before. So we have new 3D Dolby glasses that come along with that. It's just truly going to look remarkable. The other component of that is we have. And that's unique to Western Pennsylvania. As far as I know, there are no other theaters in Western Pennsylvania that have that dual laser projection capability by Christie. And then the other thing that's unique to our theater is we have a Dolby Atmos system. Most giant screen theaters have, I believe, 16 or so speakers as part of their sound system. We have 45 speakers.
Wow.
It's really tremendous. It's meant to provide a really 360-degree immersive sound experience so that you can actually sit in the theater and you can hear, you know, an example like a plane flying overhead or a bird flying around. You can hear them flying around from the side to above you, and we have 14 speakers alone on our ceiling, so you can really track it from one side to the other. So it's really pretty remarkable to experience.
You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor in for Dave Malarkey. Today we're joined by Chad Hunter. He's a manager of the Rango's Giant Cinema down at the Carnegie Science Center, talking about the big changes made to a very big screen. So who came up? You kind of mentioned that you had some input and were working on what needed to be done there, but who came up with all the plans for what was going to happen, and where did the Science Center go to find people who could kind of make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, this entire plan has been in the works for probably 10 years or so. But truly, I think the effort began probably back in 2010. Our directors here at the Science Center were weighing next options here, and you know, we had considered keeping the dome. We enjoy the dome aspect of presentation, but the technology just wasn't there yet. We weren't able to install the next generation of technology into a dome, and so we quickly decided, in order to keep up with the times, in order to provide our patrons with the best experience, we needed to take a bold step. And so that's when we pursued the arrangement that we have, that we're installing right now. We worked with professionals in the giant screen field, had a number of consultants that we've worked with to come up with the best plan. And we're truly on the forefront of this sort of conversion. There are very few domes that have converted over to giant flat screens. And so we have, there's a lot of interest and eyes on us from some of our companion or sister institutions and science centers around the country and the world who are keeping an eye on what we're doing and very curious how it works out for us. So that brings us to today.
Take us through a little bit. Once the event happened, the send-off for the old theater, what was done after that, and how did you get from there, I guess, to here? Were there people crawling through the walls? Was there what exactly happened in order to realize this?
Right. So our marathon was in July. I mentioned, I think, the very next day is when we began deconstruction. So our setup is that the dome was basically a room within a room. So the dome existed within. If you look at the outside of the Science Center, you'll see a big cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dome was a separate internal room within that cylinder. So the dome was completely torn out. The cylinder still exists. And then we just modified the inside of that, what was there, the base of it, into a giant screen, theater.
Mm-hmm.
But it was probably a month of demolition, tearing out that old dome. There was a moment where we had to smash those giant two-story glass windows that everyone could look through
right.
Into our projection booth. So that was pretty exciting. So they just tore everything out. The next stage of construction, they built this really, truly incredible four-story scaffolding inside of the theater, which brought them all the way up to the ceiling so
wow.
that they could work on installing our new lights, our new speakers, a drop ceiling. And then that gave way into preparing the theater for things like installing brand new seats. We have some really cool, colorful seats. Accessible seating, and then also installed this new giant screen that's up at the front. It really is giant, pretty remarkable. And then all the new technology, of course, as well. And then a brand new concession stand for us. And this is a phased project. We're opening up the inside of our theater and a portion of our new concession lobby. We're also in the midst of a larger construction project that will expand the Science Center in a number of other ways, including a bunch of STEM learning suites,
mm-hmm.
a gallery space, and something called Point View Hall, which will be a great a meeting space that overlooks the Three Rivers area. And so it's just part of a larger project. So that it's phased. So we're opening the theater next Friday, and then there's a portion of our theater lobby that will be included in that opening. And then next June or so, this giant construction wall that's in our lobby space will come down and open up really beautifully into the rest of the expansion.
So Rangos is a constant between the previous name and the new name. What does Rangos signify, and why is it special enough to get carried over?
Yeah, so it's Mr. John Rangos. He's from Pittsburgh, and you'll have to forgive me. I don't know the entire background on that, but I know that he was a key donor for the original Rangos OmniMax Theater, which therefore led to the name being placed, and he continues to be a great supporter of the Science Center and of this next step in our theater. And so it was just appropriate that we carried his name over and dubbed it the Rangos Giant Cinema.
Awesome. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor in for Dave Malarkey. Today we're joined by Chad Hunter, manager at the Rangos Giant Cinema at the Carnegie Science Center, talking about big changes made to a very big screen. I actually worked for a couple of years as a projectionist in a movie theater,
oh,
Chad.
You did?
Yeah, so I was wondering how you got your start in this particular line of work and your thoughts on all the advancements we kind of touched on a little bit earlier, but how much the theater experience is changing.
Sure. Well, going way back, I had studied film a little bit, but in my former, I guess my former life, I was a film archivist,
working in
film preservation. I worked at the George Eastman House, now George Eastman Museum in Rochester, New York, for a long time, and worked in their motion picture department and got involved with some projection there. And then at the same time, I was also, during that same period, was a manager at a five-screen art house cinema there as well. And that's where I kind of got my feet wet, got my passion for it, have worked in several capacities in film exhibition ever since. Before this, I was executive director of the Hollywood Theater in Dormont, a historic nonprofit theater. Was there for 4 years, and as I mentioned, helped take that theater through the film to digital conversion process. I've always had an interest in film. In fact, my grandfather was a projectionist aboard an aircraft carrier during World War II.
Oh, wow. So, that's awesome.
Yep. I have a photo of him. I remember he mentioned they would go into port, and at the time they had something called nitrate cellulose films that were flammable, different type of stock at the time. And so they would get into port, and then they would trade 35 millimeter prints with other, other ships and other units, so I know that when he got out of the service after the war, he tried to continue in that line, but just had just the reunion issues and fees that he wasn't able to do. But so that kind of stretches that. History stretches back with my family. It's kind of neat.
That is excellent. That's wonderful. All right, so we have a media event, I guess, coming up on the 20th. It's going to be the first chance that some of the rest of us get to see what you guys have been working on. What exactly is happening at that event?
Well, so, yeah, we have what you call it, a soft opening Friday, November 17th, meaning that's that light up night in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll have our regular shows available that day. We're debuting a brand new educational film called Amazon Adventure in 3D and in Dolby Atmos that utilizes our new sound system. It's a 45-minute film about Henry Bates. He was a contemporary of Darwin and went down and spent 11 years in the Amazon jungle. He discovered over 8,000 species in the Amazon, and he's also known primarily for his discovery of the phenomenon of mimicry, where an animal or an insect will mimic qualities of another animal in order to survive from being eaten. So mimic the colors of a poisonous insect, even if they're not poisonous. And so it's a really beautiful film. We're opening that. We'll have other films also. Another title called Tiny Giants in 3D. That's kind of meant for families and great for younger kids. Tells the story of a chipmunk and sort of his travails in an ecosystem, and it's a really, really great little film. And then we're also opening Star Wars, The Last Jedi 3D. That will open up December 14th.
Nice.
at the Rangos Giant Cinema. But for Monday, December 20th, that's our big press conference and media event. We'll have a lot of our staff here, too, just sort of really kick off our new theater, have everybody get a great look at it, and celebrate the opening of the new cinema.
Excellent. You mentioned Star Wars. Are there any other plans that you're able to share for what people can expect to see at the theater down the road?
Yeah. So this step to this new technology really allows us to break our old programming model open. You know, before we were restricted to showing what was available in 70mm formatted for IMAX domes, mm-hmm. and now we can essentially show whatever's available digitally, and so that's great for us. We're still committed to showing our tried and true science and education films. We have a ton of school groups that come through here, particularly in the late winter through spring and early summer. So we'll make these types of educational films available for that. But we're also able to weave in new Hollywood product like Star Wars. So I think, you know, a few times a year when we see something that we think is a good match for our audience, our patrons, will weave those in. We're also going to be doing a lot more special events, ranging from, events that celebrate the films and legacy of Doctor Who, to anime events, to classic science fiction films and series like that. There might be some opportunities for us to show a film and a live musical performance. As those come through, we're able to live stream concerts and sporting events, and so we're going to be exploring all those options as we go ahead here.
Chad Hunter, manager of the Rangos Giant Cinema at the Carnegie Science Center. We're joined by him here on It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM, just for a few more minutes, talking about the big changes that are being made to the screen down there. The Science Center has a goal of inspiring learning and curiosity by connecting science and technology with everyday life. How can the new Rangos Cinema help accomplish that goal?
Well, I think, you know, primarily this next step, I mean, we try to stay on the cutting edge of film and projection technology, and we were definitely that way in 91 with the OmniMax dome, and I think, you know, we're at the forefront of optical and projection technology in 2017 as we launch this new theater. As I mentioned, I think there's no other theater quite like it in Pittsburgh or Western Pennsylvania, and I think people are going to be really excited when they sit in our seats and we turn on our projectors and they're able to really see and hear some amazing films like Amazon Adventure and Dolby Atmos. It's just a different experience than, you know, your standard a theater that you go to with some of them have smaller screens and, not very good sound systems. Some of them are better, but this truly is a step, I think, in, we'll be unique in the area. So there's that. And I think also, we're able to fulfill our mission by showing content that truly can support and connect with some of the other activities and the science and education that we're supporting here. So, you know, there might be, for instance, we're bringing a Da Vinci exhibit in a couple of years to the Science Center, and there's currently a giant screen educational Da Vinci film in production, and so we're talking with them about potentially being the location for the premiere for that film 2019-2020. So there are opportunities for us to really connect with some of the themes and projects that we're working on here at the Science Center.
Yeah, lots of entertainment. While you were talking, I was just thinking that entertainment anymore is becoming smaller and more personalized, but there's just something about going big and seeing a film in a group or kind of communal experience that I think it's timeless, and I have lots of great memories and just really looking forward to experiencing the new screen down there.
Great. Are you able to come on Monday the 20th?
I hope so. Okay. I'm going to try for sure. What are the theater hours, and how can people get tickets, I guess?
Yeah, so you can go to the Carnegie Science Center's website, carnegiescienceCenter.org, and you'll see at the top of the page, it says Giant Cinema. You can click that link. You can see some of the films that we have coming up. We're just adding some showtimes right now. You can buy advanced tickets for our Star Wars shows that start December 14th. We've just added, we have an annual tradition of showing the Polar Express.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're glad to be able to continue that tradition. We just have added showtimes for our traditional Polar PJ parties that we do. We'll be adding more showtimes for the Polar Express soon. The great thing about that is we're now able to show the Polar Express in 3D. We'll also have some 2D showings for, we'll have a few screenings for sensory sensitive individuals too. So that'll be in 2D. We'll weave that in. So we'll be adding showtimes, more showtimes in the next week. They can stay tuned to that page. And then also they can join us, they can follow us on Facebook. To search Rangos Giant Cinema, and they can get the latest information there as well.
Excellent. I can't wait to get down there and see the new Rangos Giant Cinema at the Carnegie Science Center. Thank you so much, Chad, for joining us on the show today.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
I'm Ryan Saylor in for Dave Malarkey. Thanks for listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook, Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your holiday meal special. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are specifically fed non-GMO grain and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest, highest quality turkey or chicken, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit them online at jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best.
You and your family are invited to attend the Thompson Miller 17th Annual Remembrances, Tinsels, and Tears Candlelight Memorial Service on Tuesday, December 5th at 7 o'clock in the evening at the Mount Chestnut Presbyterian Church, 727 West Old Route 422 in nearby Mount Chestnut. Holiday time can be difficult, especially after experiencing the recent death of someone you love. We want to support you to remember the life of your loved one during this holiday season. The Acts Choir will be joining us again this year, and there is no charge. Our special remembrance tree in memory of loved ones who have died is on display throughout December at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in downtown Butler. Please join us on Tuesday, December 5th at 7 o'clock in the evening at the Mount Chestnut Presbyterian Church, 727 Old Route 422 in nearby Mount Chestnut, easily handicap accessible. For information about purchasing a remembrance ornament in memory of your loved one, visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. The name of your loved one will be recognized at the service, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and welcome to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor in for Dave Malarkey, and today we're joined by Patty Everly, who is the curator of historic exhibits, talking about the miniature railroad and village at the Carnegie Science Center, as well as several other train-related activities going on this holiday season at the Science Center. Hello, Patty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's begin with this special treat for visitors this time of year at the Science Center, that the miniature railroad and village. Tell us about the history of this display, kind of how it's got started.
Sure. The miniature railroad is 97 years old this year. It was started in 1919 by a man named Charlie Bowditch in Brookville, Pennsylvania. In the early 50s, there were so many visitors coming to see his amazing display that he was looking for a new facility, a new place to house it. He could no longer keep it in his house and have so many hundreds of thousands of visitors coming through. So the Buell Planetarium was also at that time looking to expand on a small train display that it had been putting up during the holiday season. And so Charlie hooked up with the Buell Planetarium. The display moved there and became the Buell's in 1954. That first year, it was open from December 1st to December 30th, and 23,000 people came to see it.
Wow.
And it's grown ever since. And that's when it started. It's, you know, it started here in Pittsburgh as the Pittsburgh tradition. It was in 1954. And then the Buell Planetarium became the Carnegie Science Center. We built this building, and the Miniature Railroad moved into its new permanent home on the second floor of the Science Center. And it's important to say, too, that we are open where we, while we were seasonal at the Buell, since moving here in 92, we are practically year-round. We do take a small break in the fall, October and early November, to do some preservation work on the display and add the new replica. And do some basic repairs that need to happen and can only happen when the display is closed. And so we're reopening today.
Excellent. That's awesome. Now, Patty, you're the curator of historic exhibits at the Science Center. Can you tell us a little bit about what that job entails, especially as it relates to the Miniature Railroad?
Well, I've been with the Miniature Railroad now. I'm surprised to hear myself say it. It's been 26 years.
Wow.
And As it relates to the Miniature Railroad, I, of course, manage the display staff and administratively, but then also direct. I think of myself as like an artistic director, so direct my team on, and we'll collaborate on changes that we're going to make, kind of keep track of repairs that need to be made, and then we work on deciding what the next replica is going to be and researching that and then building that. Everything is always done in-house and always has been here at the Science Center.
So you mentioned being in this role for 20-some years. How did you get started? Were you starting at the Science Center doing just that job, or I guess kind of how did you get into that?
No, pretty much, yeah. I was with some kind of an odd story, ancient history, but I started originally just volunteering as an artist to do some art projects. This building wasn't open yet. It was right in the transition from Buell to here, and there were some art projects I volunteered to do. And then those projects wrapped up, the building opened, but they were in the process of rebuilding this display to make it a permanent display and asked if I wanted to join the team, and that's when I joined the team.
Getting back to the railroad, how has the display changed, I guess, or evolved over the years, and what kind of new additions specifically can people expect this year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's changed quite a lot. We are, since the move to Buell, and we've been here, it would be 25 years now, at the Carnegie Science Center, it's 60% larger than the Buell Planetarium. So it's 83 by 30 feet, so it's large. And it, like I said, it is a permanent display. And every year we add a new historic replica to the display and change things around, redo areas. We're excited because this year's display is the iconic flagship Permanente Brothers restaurant.
Oh, yeah,
in the
I heard
district.
About that.
Yeah. So that was an exciting project. It was fun to research Permantes. When we pick replicas, we do have a specific criteria that we try to keep to and follow, which is we're looking for pieces representative of Pittsburgh and the whole southwestern region of Pennsylvania that are important, either historically, and that can be about many things, and, you know, science and technology, as with the Westinghouse Atom Smasher last year. So historically, architecturally, or culturally. And his Permanente Brothers certainly ticked the cultural box.
Oh, yeah.
Very definitely, but it also has historic roots, too. The Permanente Brothers themselves started this business of serving these. They designed these sandwiches to be a meal, a whole meal that could be held in one hand. So they operated out of a sandwich cart in the 1920s, selling their creation to truck drivers who were coming down to the strip, to the produce terminal there, to take fresh fruits and vegetables to the supermarkets all hours of the night. And so they made these this grab-and-go meal, as we know it today, and it was quite a hit. You know, they made, then in 1933, they moved into that, into the 18th Street restaurant.
You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor. I'm in for Dave Malarkey. Today we're joined by Patty Everly, who is the curator of historic exhibits, talking about the Miniature Railroad down at the Carnegie Science Center. You kind of touched on this earlier, Patty, but So you're part of the decision makers. Who else is talking about these new additions, and when, I guess, do you start planning for the next year's new addition?
Sure, sure. Well, we take input from anybody and everybody all year round. So our visitors contribute ideas, staff and volunteers contribute ideas. We pay attention to what's in the news. Can we bring attention, like I'll mention the Westinghouse Atom Smasher again. Mm-hmm. Can we bring attention in some small way to an important piece of history? And, you know, is there something important in the news that would coincide with the debut of a new model?
Sure.
And you know, we're researchers. We're always researching. So it's a grassroots effort. It initially starts here at the Miniature Railroad itself between me and my staff. If I get some ideas, we usually try to get a small list together. There's usually one thing on the list that's really popping, though, and we know mm-hmm. that's really the one. And we'll do some research into it, the validity of it. Is this going to be a good addition? Is it going to blend seamlessly with artistically and visually with what we're already doing? Mm-hmm. You know, can it coexist nicely with everything else? And where will it go? Do we have room for it? Unfortunately, a lot of pieces, like people always mention the Cathedral of Learning, which would be amazing. Mm-hmm. But even scaled down, it would be so big.
Yeah.
So that sometimes eliminates things right away. But we'll do research into all aspects of the model, what it will look like, what will we build it out of, and more importantly, you know, what is its history? Let's dig into that. Let's look at old newspapers. Let's go into archives. And then when we think we've got a pretty good case to make and we're pretty convinced, yeah, this is, I think, what we want to do, then we run it up the flagpole here at the Science Center to the directors mm-hmm. and get their feedback and blessing on the new piece, and then we're off to the races.
I can't believe it's been 25 years that of the new Science yeah. Center being open. It just seems like the other day that it was kind of, you know, everybody was so excited that it was moving over there on the North Shore. And what kind of, I guess, advantages do you think that location there brings specifically for having it for the railroad there?
Well, the railroad is now, this gallery was designed originally to house the Miniature Railroad. Mm-hmm. So we have a dedicated space. We have our workshop right off of the Miniature Railroad. We had room to expand greatly. We installed this amazing lighting system that a lot, you know, so that sequence from day into night. It enabled us to completely upgrade our technology. So we use a system called Opto 22 input-output modules. So it's everything's on like a giant script.
Okay.
And told automatically when to turn on, when to turn off, mm-hmm. when to cycle to day and night. We literally only have to push the button to start it in the morning.
Wow.
but the trains are always the one thing you can't control. They
right.
have a mind of their own.
Right.
They're a lot of fun as well. So, yeah, there was a lot of advantages.
Any other interesting features about the village that you think people would be surprised about or find interesting?
Oh, geez, I think just all of the history. I hope people come through and are amazed and excited to discover maybe aspects of their, you know, our history here in Western Pennsylvania that maybe they didn't know or they had forgotten about. We always hope to spark memories among our visitors. You know, then I always say we learn as much from our visitors as they learn from us, because we hear these amazing stories. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the ideas, you know, discussions with them generate ideas about what we can do better or new. I think people would be surprised at just the variety and the sheer number of historic replicas that we have and the story that the display tells about the history of our area. Fun, interesting, exciting, and odd, even.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned a few things being added yearly, periodically, to the exhibit. Does that mean that other things are removed, or do things kind of cycle in and out, or is it just added on, and can you do that, I guess, indefinitely?
Well, you can't do it indefinitely because we do have a limited amount
right.
of space. Real estate is getting tight.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, we're creative about it. We try to not remove things. Certainly don't want to remove things that are historically significant
mm-hmm.
because as soon as we do, our visitors notice.
Right.
They notice right away. But oftentimes we are able to shift things around. And it's a great opportunity for us to reimagine a scene.
Yeah.
And completely redo it, rethink it. How can we feature what we have here better as we add something new? Can we up our game? We're always trying to challenge ourselves. Can we do it better?
You know?
But occasionally, yes, things do have to be cycled off. We have a great library of, well, I call it our archives, of other models, you know, models that have cycled off and may return someday. Others may not. But there's many, many of them.
Yeah, you'd probably be able to start an entirely new exhibit with just those, kind of a model railroad of yesteryear, some sort of maybe cycle that in at some point. But you mentioned working together with your staff a little bit earlier. If you would, talk a little bit about who exactly builds and repairs this exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do it all ourselves. We do have support from the Science Center's technicians.
Mm-hmm.
Our fab lab helped us cut with the laser. We cut the sign on the laser cutter for Permantes. The other departments support us, and then certainly we do, I would say, most of it ourselves here among the railroad staff. So cleaning and repairing as a combination of Science Center technicians and miniature railroad staff. And when we need to go to, like, our fellow fab lab department here to use some of their equipment. They're generous, and they'll teach us how to use their equipment. We've also invested in our own 3D equipment here at the Miniature Railroad.
Okay.
So we're pretty much self-sufficient to a certain degree. Occasionally we need the electrician. We need our technician. We have a great technician whose expertise is in fixing the little miniature animations and things and helping us with things like plumbing and electrical work. But the models we do all build here, right in the workshop on the workbench.
That's excellent. Do you know of any other similar exhibits in the area, or have you been in contact with any other, I guess, people that kind of do the same thing that you do for these large exhibits? Do you guys trade ideas or anything like that, or problems, or do you know of any other sort of people that kind of do the same thing?
I'm not tied into other public displays like
mm-hmm.
ours, but of course I know a lot of hobbyists in the community, who some of them are more strictly just the trains, but certainly there's a great local company called Scenic Express, where we get most of our landscaping materials,
mm-hmm.
and he's been a great collaborator. He always turns us on to new materials, new products that are out there. Often they come from, Sweden or Germany, and just keeping me in the loop on what's new out there that we might be interested in using and things like that. There are a lot of forums online, and people are doing some pretty amazing work out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Ryan Saylor. Today we're joined by Patty Everly, who is the Carnegie Science Center Curator of Historic Exhibits, talking about the Miniature Railroad and the village down there that's actually opening today, Monday. Patty, you're kind of more of an expert, I guess, than most on miniature railroads and the village at the Science Center. Did you grow up with a train or an interest in them as a kid? And why do you think the trains are so fascinating and have that connection, I guess, with especially kids?
Well, I think, and I've said this before, I think that in here in Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania, it's kind of in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, railroads were everywhere here, and they still are. I can right here from the Science Center see three tracks,
mm-hmm.
and there's a great deal of freight that moves right along the Ohio River here that we can look out the window and see. But I always say, no, I didn't grow up with model trains, but I never lived where I couldn't hear a train.
Yeah.
So I just think that, of course, there's, the romanticism of trains, but everybody around here knew somebody, either you lived by trains,
mm-hmm.
Or you knew somebody that worked for a railroad. It impacts our life here in a very real way, I think.
We like to.
I want to mention, you mentioned about other fellow hobbyists.
For sure.
In the area. We have, and I mentioned, that we network with them. we have a great event I want to give a plug for.
Sure.
That happens in January. It's called Locomotion Weekend. We've been doing it probably for, gosh, I'm just off the cuff, and I know I'm going to be incorrect here, 6-7 years now. And this year it's January 6th and 7th over that weekend, and we invite those local hobbyists and train enthusiasts and little clubs that have portable displays that can travel to set up here at the Science Center. So it's a lot of fun. There's all different scales, from teeny-weeny little N scale, American Flyer scale, O scale like we run here. And then we also have something called Locomotion Doctor, where folks can bring in, if they had an engine running over the holidays, and either they want to give it a little get a little checkup before they put it away, or just maybe it, you know, they think it might need some servicing. They can only do the basics, but they will take a look at it, and they can do oil and certain minor things that they can do without requiring, you know, any specific parts.
That sounds like an awesome weekend.
It's an awesome weekend. It's a lot of fun, and I invite everybody to come down and see us January 6th and 7th.
Cool. Excellent. We want to remind folks that the display is now open. It's actually opening today to the public. If you could, Patty, what are the hours the display is open? And I guess you said it's pretty much open through the winter and spring and into the summer there.
We're open now nonstop until... We haven't set a date yet, but it would be early October next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are open straight through. You can come in during the holiday season, which we hope a lot of folks will, but certainly in January and through the summer into September to see the miniature railroad. And then I said, like I said, we close for that little window of 5 or 6 weeks so that we can do the things we need to do to refresh the display and renew it with new items. We are open today, 10 to 5.
Okay.
And I encourage everyone to check the Science Center, CarnegieScienceCenter.org's website for building hours. Mm-hmm. We're open with the same with Carnegie, you know, regular building operating hours.
Okay.
So they don't run. We're open. If the Science Center's open, we're open.
And as far as people getting tickets, I mean, they don't need a special ticket. If they have a ticket for the Science Center, they're able to get into the railroad.
Correct.
Exhibit,
correct. We're included with general admission. We're part of the Science Center.
Okay. And I also wanted to ask you, because I think we mentioned a little bit earlier, but you also work with the submarine, correct?
That's right.
Is there anything new and different, I guess, going on with the submarine recently?
Well, we're going into our winter schedule, December 1st at the submarine.
Okay.
So we will be open closed weekdays and open weekends, weather permitting.
Okay.
And that runs through to the 1st of March. And then we open back up for full operations. We are open all of holiday week, the week between December 25th and the 31st. So the submarine will be open for that busy holiday week as well. But the submarine's always an exciting and amazing.
Oh yeah, no,
exhibit to see if you haven't been there.
Yeah, it's so unique. I mean, not everybody gets to have a submarine parked, you know, that near downtown and in the major city.
Absolutely.
That's near them, so that's really excellent.
And we're always working to refresh the interior displays and try to present her, you know, as you're going through, you feel like the submariner's just stepped off and you're getting a peek into their life. We try to recreate all the spaces with real or recreated artifacts of the way it would have looked.
Now that I have you on the line here, I always wondered, I guess, and wanted to ask: is there any special care, I guess, or concern in terms of having it there on the river and with ice and everything in the wintertime, or is it pretty much immune to any sort of situation that would occur on the winter or
well,
on the
cold.
River having to do with the winter? Yeah,
it gets cold. We are heated inside.
Okay.
So. We have heat in the winter and air conditioning in the summer. Having said that, yes, when wherever ice is over, it can get sometimes too cold inside.
Mm-hmm.
The heat can't quite keep up with it with when the submarine's encrusted with ice. But no, she's moored there. She rises, she floats. So when the river rises, she rises.
That's really, yeah, it's neat. I haven't been in the submarine for a couple of years, but I definitely... enjoy the Science Center and especially the train display. I can't wait to get down and see the new addition, the Permanis.
Please do.
This year. Very much looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Patty, for joining us on the show
Thank
today.
Thank you
really
so
appreciate
much.
It.
We hope to see you down here soon.
Absolutely. I'm Ryan Saylor and for Dave Malarkey. You've been listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 2727. The pick 3 is 364. Pick 4, 8609. The pick 5, 69287.
Wild ball for each of those is 2. The treasure hunt, 1, 8, 15, 26, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Hey, folks, do you realize how long Miller's Shoes has been a presence on Main Street in downtown Butler? Would you believe 125 years? Yes. They're celebrating their 125th anniversary. Families have been shopping for quality and value at Miller's Shoes for well over a century. They're at 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. And with winter weather on us, Miller's Shoes is your headquarters for overshoes and boots for the bad weather. Timberland Shoes and Boots, for example. Many other famous name brands, too. Rockport, Trotters, and all of your famous name brand athletic shoes. Miller's Shoes, also your local headquarters for America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS Shoes. You'll find them for men and women, various styles and colors, at Miller's Shoes. And don't forget, for gift giving, gift certificates. What a great idea for a holiday gift for someone special. A gift certificate from Miller's Shoes. Stop in, talk to Jimmy Chipran and the folks at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating their 125th anniversary.
Welcome back. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. That wraps up our show. Tomorrow, get ready for Ask the Vet. We'll be talking with Dr. Dennis Damon and also with our friends at the Butterball Hotline. That's tomorrow on It's Your Turn.
The classic hits are on Real Hometown.